This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.
Welcome to the Infected.
Hello, sisters and brothers. Welcome to another special episode of The Infected. We are the podcast that brings you all that's good from post-punk to new wave, from goth to alternative, from synth-pop to dark wave. And of course, we play the classics we love, but we also introduce you to fresh tracks from new stars in the genre. And talking of new stars, in this episode we feature Vision Video. They are an upcoming self-declared goth-pop band, and they describe their style as dance music for the end times. The band hails from Athens, Georgia, USA. You may have heard them before in The Infected. We played their song Inked in Red in a previous episode and have followed them ever since. Today, my co-host Gove and I are talking to Dusty, the charismatic frontman of Vision Video. We'll hear all about their sources of inspiration, creative process, their upcoming first album, and how the band has dealt with the setbacks this year, which at times really did feel like we had entered the end times. But first, let's kick off the show with some music. This is one of the true classics inspiring Vision Video. It's also a firm favorite of us here at The Infected. Please enjoy Joy Division with Disorder. Pleasures of the normal man. I love the lyrics.
That's a timeless classic. It's a great one. Is it the first track of the first album, I believe, right?
Yeah, it's on their first it's just on Unknown Pleasures.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, I think that you can really tell where he was coming from, you know. Joy Division is one of those, you know, so well-known and well-loved bands, and it's for a good reason. And I think that that reason really, for me, comes through in this song. It was actually, funny enough, the first Joy Division song that I ever heard. And I think there's just such a, like, combination of a desperate man who's seeking, you know, some better form of life, but also, you know, this beautiful aspect and the appreciation of, you know, what he has. And there's just kind of duality that I get from that song every time I listen to it. It's dancey, but it's sad. It's sort of so multifaceted. And I think that's really the essence of what made Ian Curtis such a great artist. You know, he was heavily flawed and he was a very, you know, conflicted guy, and he wasn't always the best person. Even if you read about him, you know, he was kind of violent in outbursts and with his wife, who they married so young, they never should have married, you know. But he was also so smart, you know, he read so much and he wrote so much, and he was just he had this beautiful poetic mind. And I think that that's a lot of artists, you know, it's, you know, people get put on a pedestal as an artist, especially one that, like, dies in an untimely way like he did.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that takes away from the complexity of the person, you know. And I just think that Disorder is the most characteristic track of Joy Division, of all of their songs. You know, it really just embodies everything that made them great. That, like, that bass line that, like, almost doesn't work, but it somehow just really ties that song together, and it really just identifies Peter Hook. And then, you know, Ian Curtis's lyrics are just phenomenal, and they're so relatable. And then that really just washed out reverb filled guitar from Bernard.
Mm-hmm.
And then the drums are just simple, but it's just like that driving dancey beat that really created that soundscape that I think would build what would become like gothic rock and dark wave and all that sort of stuff. So
yeah,
just a phenomenal song. And as I get older, everything that I go through, it still just stays like my favorite track of theirs. So
there's a lot of passion as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite basic, but there's a lot of passion if I listen to the song. But how old are you, by the way, Dusty, if I may ask?
So I'm 34. sometimes I feel
getting older. That's not that bad.
Yeah, I feel older sometimes, and I feel younger sometimes too. Like, you know, I very rarely, like, consider my age, because I spent so much of my 20s and my younger years, like, in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And those years just disappeared. I mean, it was, like, so fast, you know, getting ready to go to Afghanistan and doing all that. And just all of that time just sort of disappeared into a void in a way. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I forget that I'm in my mid-30s. But, you know, I mean, we sort of, especially in the entertainment world, there's like this fetishization of youth.
Mm.
But I don't think I could have written any of the stuff that I've written that has as much meaning as it does without the experiences. So, like, you know, with age comes experience. And I think that gains some level of authenticity to what I'm saying.
That definitely makes sense. So how long were you sent out? Was it just Afghanistan? I don't mean just, but
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, yeah, no, it was enough. I'll say that much. It was the one time. Yeah, I went to Afghanistan in 2000. Let's see here. It was 2000. I can't even remember anymore. 2013 to 14. So it was about 9 months. And we were located down in the southeastern portion of the country in a city called Kandahar, which is the second largest city.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we heard a lot about that city in the news, in a bad way.
Yeah, it's sort of like the Wild West, to use an American metaphor. It's like, it's where the Taliban came from, so it's like an extremely violent area. It's just really... the city is like super divided, a lot of, you know, suicide bombings, drive-by shootings, IEDs, truck bombs. That, you know, it's all like guerrilla style. There's really not like a lot of fighting, like outright stand-up fighting, but it was more just kind of like waiting around to get blown up, it felt like all the time. Yeah, and so, you know, that whole experience for me just, it really set the stage for what Vision Video has become. Mm-hmm. And you know, I came back, and it's funny because my platoon, I was a rifle platoon leader, so I was responsible for 30 men, and not one of them got hurt, not one of them was killed. Everybody came back, but, you know, so it would appear that it's like, okay, well, everything's just good, but, and I thought so personally when I came back. You know, we were, our unit was stationed in Germany, so we redeployed to Germany, which is where I lived for 4 years, and, you know, for a while I was just like, well, I'm fine. I was just so happy to be back, but the stress of that 9 months just really settled into me, and it just so negatively affected me. And it honestly didn't even really manifest until I came back to the States in 2016 when I left the Army. And then it really started to come out, and I was just like so confused because for so long I felt fine. And then all of a sudden I was like just so anxious all the time. Anytime I was in public, I was just like, it felt like I was just gritting my teeth, just like clenched jaw, just tight fisted because I was so nervous being around people in large crowds, or, you know, and it just started to really negatively affect my ability to have like normal relationships with people. Mm. So I, you know, what became Vision Video is a couple years of writing just music and lyrics and sort of long form prose or poetry or whatever you want to call it that would become the lyrics for the actual songs. Of me just trying to figure out like what the hell was going on with my life and in my head, and it's interesting now to look back on it where I feel like a lot better about everything that I've gone through, but you know, it never goes away. You just learn to deal with it. And I appreciate the band and my bandmates so much because I 100% know that I would not still be alive if it weren't for that, the band. 100%. I mean, it was down to that point where I was so desperate. And, you know, to harken back to Joy Division, you know, that's when I really started to identify with that band. Cause I mean, I always loved Joy Division, just sonically at least, but I read a book about Ian Curtis, that I can't remember who wrote it, but, and then I also read Bernard or Peter Hook's book rather, and you know, and I just started to really comprehend the gravity of what he was going through, and I don't think it was the same situation, obviously, but I really understood the intensity of that music in a different way, and that really helped me cater a lot of the music that I was writing.
I guess there's a similarity maybe in the fact that Ian had a lot of tension bottled up because of his life choices and the fact that he was with his wife and he actually wanted to be with his girlfriend and he felt that he had an obligation.
Yeah.
And at the same time, he didn't feel that he could live up to it. And all that tension was bottled up. And it sounds like from a totally different place, you may have gone through something similar in the sense that
right.
You also bottled up a lot of anxiety maybe and weren't even aware of it for a time. So maybe that gives it a new layer that maybe the 15-year-old Dusty did not recognize, but the Dusty of today definitely does, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, it's again, you know, as you get older, you start to see things a little bit clearer for what they are. The emotions don't get in the way of the logic, but it doesn't make anything less worse when you're in the middle of it, I guess. You know, you can, it almost makes it worse in a way because you can see the logic of, well, I need to get help, or, you know, I need to talk to somebody. But I'm, you know, especially for me coming from a military background, like we just didn't do that. We didn't talk about it.
You just man up and power through, right?
Yes.
So how did that work? How did you get into to the military? Is your family in the military as well, maybe? Or?
Yeah, my dad was in the army as well. I was born in Berlin, actually. My mother's German. My dad was in the army. And he spent about 13 years after I was born in the military. So, you know, I grew up moving around, and it kind of made sense to me from a young age. It was always something that was kind of in the back of my mind, to like, oh, okay, well, I could just join the army.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was 17, I dropped out of high school because I hated it. We were living in rural Georgia, and it was just terrible high school, very impoverished area. The school was just like, you didn't learn anything because there were no resources. The teachers had way too many kids in the class. It was just not, you know, and I was like, I'm not learning anything here. So I left, and I basically joined the military like a year later. And yeah, I think at the time, in the hubris of youth, you know, you think things are really good ideas that are really shit ideas. And that was one of them, because there was like two wars going on, you know.
Yeah.
And I you know, for me, it was like I was reading a lot of like French existentialist stuff. And I was like, a bit too much Hemingway. And I was like, oh, I need to go to this war. And I never like believed in it, which is even more stupid, if you can believe that. But I just thought, like, I just felt very placeless, and I was like,
yeah,
you know, trying to find some level of purpose. And that was purpose for me at the time. It's like, you're going to be with these guys and girls who are, they're really just there to take care of each other. Cause I always knew that these wars were just bullshit.
Yeah.
But again, being young and stupid, I was like, well, I'm just going to go do this. So
got to be a certain appeal to it. And talking back on it is always easier than when you make that choice at that certain moment in time. Mm-hmm. That's why we talk to you, to find out more about who's Dusty. We're going to talk about music. We're going to keep it light. It's not going to be heavy all the time. But at the same time, I don't want to lose the opportunity to understand who we're talking to. So thanks for sharing.
Yeah, definitely.
So for all our Spotify listeners, because most people that listen to The Infected are Spotify listeners, there's a great tip. There's a new podcast. It's just out on Spotify. It was released in November, so last month. And it's called Transmissions, The Definitive Story of New Order and Joy Division. I don't know if you've heard it, but it's based on new and exclusive interviews with Bernard Sumner, Peter Hook, Stephen Morris, Gillian Gilbert, Bono, Tony Wilson, and many more. And the series captures their tale like never before. It's really worthwhile. I'll include a link to this podcast in the show notes on our site, theinfected.nl, or you can look it up for yourself. It's called Transmissions, The Definitive Story of New Order and Joy Division. It's really fun. It's very well produced. And, you know, having the perspective of all these guys so many years later is really, really great to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. I've heard of it, and it's on my, like, I literally just finished another series about Joy Division from a fantastic music podcast. It's a history podcast called No Dogs in Space. And they just did a whole punk rock series, and I think they're sort of segueing into post-punk now. But they just did a four-part series on Joy Division that was really phenomenal. But yeah, that's definitely on my list, and I'm going to for sure check that out. So I will follow your link.
Cool.
Mirun, maybe we can also suggest the 24-hour Party People documentary about Factory Records.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great documentary, yeah.
Have you seen that, Dusty?
Yeah.
The guy playing Tony Wilson is doing an excellent job. It's very, very entertaining, yeah.
Yeah, that's a funny one too. Like, that's... I think they took a little bit of liberty here and there, but it's...
Oh, yeah, they did.
But, I mean, those scenes, like, where they're in the hacienda are just so funny. It's so funny.
It's worthwhile. It's funny.
It's just like, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's move on to another great act from England, actually, from the same time period, a little later, though. The Chameleons. This is the second song that you picked as being inspirational to you and Vision Video and your material. So we're talking about the Chameleons' track The Fen and the Bellows. And actually, you specifically suggested that we should use the Peels session version.
Yeah.
So want to talk us through how you got introduced to this track and what it means to you?
Yeah, so I found the Chameleons through a friend of mine when I was about 18 or 19, and I was going to a lot of like kind of post-punk goth rock shows in Atlanta, and two of my friends lived there, and one of them was like, hey, have you ever heard of this band called The Chameleons? And I was sort of like that know-it-all goth rock teenage kid, was like, oh, I've heard of everything, I've never heard of this though. And he put it on, and I mean, it just totally blew me away. Like the timing, the sensibilities of the bass player and the guitar player, and just that really bombastic drumming, it was so sonically different than anything that I had ever heard to that point. And this song and this whole record, the Peel Sessions record that they did, was just, it's so incredible and telling of how impeccable their musicianship is. The lyrics are passionate and intense, but there's this like sort of violent aggressiveness that like is layered underneath, and I think it's just like a seminal and underrated post-punk band, because it really has that punk rock vibe, that sneering guitar, but it's got that beauty and the dancey vibe that post-punk so often espouses, and I love it. It's just such a great track.
I think this may be the most passionate introduction that any track on the show has ever had. So let's listen to it straight away. The Fan and the Bellows, the 2014 remastered version, the John Peel session by The Chameleons. Here we go.
Mm-hmm. It's something I actually just found out about a couple of years ago and ran into it. And I was just like, wow, this is, it's, I mean, their studio records are so good. But I mean, it was just, I think that they're a band that just really excels in a live scene. One of the last shows that I went to was Mark Burgess in the Chameleons Vox on tour in Atlanta. And it was so good. It was, I mean, I think I drank like one tiny hair too much that night, but I mean, I was in full force, like just dancing my ass off the whole show. And it was such a good time. And at the end of it, Mark, you know, he meets everybody and he's just such a nice guy. And it was so cool just to talk to him, because it was actually Mark, and Tom Ashton of the March Violets, who's the producer and studio recorder of our record and all the singles to this point, he was there too. And they knew each other from back, you know, in the 80s. So they were like, oh, it's good to see you. Like, and they were just, you know, that was such a small scene back then that...
back in the day.
Yeah, they just like, they were like, oh, it's cool. It's so good to see you. And they just started talking. And it was just such a cool moment to like watch happen. To see these like titans of post-punk and goth rock,
yeah,
like, you know, like old friends, you know, it was really cool
that you even got to talk to Mark Burgess as well, because I saw that show too at Chameleons Vox at 2012. It was the venue wasn't that great. It was in Amsterdam, kind of echoey. Those energy was great. The vocals were not awesome, but it's a very it's one of my favorite bands of all time, the Chameleons.
Yeah, they had. They had a lot of those, like, that were so good, like Dolly's Picture is, like, such a fantastic song. And I don't think that was ever on a studio record.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think a lot of those cool hidden gems of post-punk are just sort of, like, waiting for people to find them because they never made it to, like, these big studio records. But... honestly, those are some of my favorite songs of all time. You know, is the B-sides and all the weird oddities that you find that never made it to studio records.
Absolutely. And when you talk about Chameleons, they did three or four. The first three or four albums were so great.
Yep.
There were no fillers, all killers. And then they had these early recordings with singles on top of. It's really quite something, because you also had bands that just did some singles and then... imploded or stopped, but this was a really productive band with almost only good songs, if you ask me.
Yeah, there's a couple of the songs that when they got towards the end of their career that were just like tonally so different, but they weren't like bad, they just didn't strike and resonate with me anymore. But you know, I always respect artists who do change and evolve. I mean, you know, the stuff that I'm writing right now for Vision Video's second record already, just in a very basic sense, is like a lot different. And I think it's important to kind of continue to evolve and to change, because if you're just writing the same record over again, it's like, I don't know, it just feels kind of like a cheat.
I get what you're saying. Great track, The Chameleons. Talking about Tom Ashton, you just mentioned him. He's recording and mixing your you guys' singles. I saw on Discogs you were going to release an album, Inked in Red. I just saw that single, so can we expect a full-length album then?
Yeah, so basically the plan is for an early April release of Inked in Red, which is the actual name of the full-length. And we've got three singles that are going to be dropping beforehand. Our next one is on February 3rd, and that will be Static Drone, and then a couple more that are in line before the full-length release. And we're really excited, because I think that if the people that liked the single In My Side are really in for something, because there's a lot of similar stuff coming in that regard, but there's also some very different still tonally similar songs that are just...
Goddamn, you got me triggered, because I love the track. It's so layered. It's got a really high replay value, so if you got a lot more stuff like that or along with that coming out, I'm really intrigued.
Yeah, it's an interesting record because, you know, we started out as a three piece, and it was Jason, Dan, and I, and you know, Emily joined after our very first show that we played live, and we incorporated her like immediately. But I had already written most of the songs, so we started to kind of look at a lot of this new material that I was writing and just kind of bringing her way more into it. So like you'll actually hear her singing a lot more on the full length, and she's got a killer voice. And you know, Emily is a classically trained pianist, so she is a phenomenal keyboard player, and some of the work that she does on these newer tracks especially, it's just like wow, like mind-blowing. So there's a little bit more synthiness. It's not as heavily guitar driven. The guitars are definitely still there, but it's just a richer sound in the newer stuff that we're adding with it. But it's still going to sit really well with In My Side, Inkton Red, and Agent Orange. And the whole record really tells a story anyway. So it's kind of, you know, that the whole record is about mania in a way. It's about ups and downs, highs and lows. And you're going to get that. You're going to get the darker, more heavy guitar-driven stuff.
Yeah, I like that.
And then you're going to get the synthy dance party, wild, you know, death rock, like 80s-sounding stuff. And it just fluctuates, and I think it's a really well-balanced record that way.
So you'll be playing that that Fender Jaguar I saw you with on YouTube with some nice effects on it.
Oh,
Emily
yeah.
will be doing some synths, some keys. That's a nice extra addition. Mm-hmm. Can't wait.
I'm hypercritical of everything that I make artistically and musically, and that's why I know that this record is good, because I actually feel like this is a good record. Because normally I'm like, I'll write a song, I'm like, this is shit, and I'll throw it away and start another one, throw that one away, you know. So, you know, and a lot of that is, I hope that doesn't come off as conceited, but it's really just the fact that I work with three other unbelievable musicians and Tom Ashton's guidance, you know, in the recording process, but even in the songwriting process. And he had a lot of kind of guidance for us in crafting the songs, you know, and just, you know, deciding, hey, like, let's move this here, or let's get rid of this part, or, you know, things like that. Really, he did an incredible job. And then in the sort of post recording process, you know, he really adds a body of complexity to the songs that he's just so good at, you know, and it's just from years and years of experience that he has.
Excellent.
I can imagine. So how did you meet Tom? How did you get in touch with him? You're 34. He's been going at it for 40, 50 years. How did you come across?
So this is actually a really funny story. I bartend part-time. Well, not right now because the bar is closed. I bartend at a music venue. It's a kind of world-famous place here in Athens called the Georgia Theater.
Okay, yeah.
And the Georgia Theater is like where the B-52s and REM and Pylon and all these like really great post-punk bands got their start. So when I left the Army, I was working full-time there as a bartender when I moved back to Georgia. And my friend, who is the bar manager, and I started doing like a goth night because there really wasn't one. There hadn't been one for like 20 years in Athens. So we were like, well, we'll do it. And it's, you know, and it gained this like really crazy following. We did like the first night we did it, we were like, I don't know if anybody's even going to come to this. And then it was like tons of people. So it got really popular, and it was a lot of fun because we really espoused the party aspect of it. But one night I was playing Snake Dance by the March Violets.
Yes.
And like out of the blue, somebody comes up to me, and I was like three sheets to the wind, pissed, you know, drunk on
whatever they had to offer.
Yeah. And one of my friends came up to me. She was a regular at the goth night, and she's like, hey, Dusty, you know that Tom Ashton is here? And I was like, who the fuck is Tom Ashton? And she's like, Tom Ashton, the guitar player of the song that you're playing. And I was like, oh, shit. Because I had been aware of the March Violets and that in a couple other tracks, but I didn't know a lot about the backstory.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, yeah, he's a good friend of mine. Let me introduce you. And I was like, oh, shit. So she brings him over and he's like, oh, it's a good song you're playing. And I'm like embarrassed because I'm like, yeah, thanks, man. I love this song. and we got to talking in a set break. He's just asking me about music. And we just, it was so cool because he's such an unbelievably friendly guy. And I at the time I was working on this solo thing. This is pre-Vision Video. And it was called Agonal Gasps, and it was just like this really synth-heavy, like almost borderline industrial, but like a little bit of guitar and post-punk in there. And he was like, well, hey, you know, if you ever want to record this, just let me know, because I would love to work with you.
Violent band name, Dusty.
Yeah.
Agonal Gasps, and you got inked in red, and then we had Agent Orange, and it's kind of heavy on the titles.
Yeah, I like striking titles that are, like, even just in name, evoke a response, because I think it's a really good way to give people insight to what you're bringing to them. But yeah, we ended up, I ended up shortly thereafter sort of forming Vision Video. And then I just sort of kept in touch with Tom. He invited me to, like, a Christmas party that year. That was 2016. And, you know, I just basically... from there, or no, I'm sorry, 2017. But yeah, we from there got in touch with him, and he wanted to record us. And, you know, because I'd sent him some demos, and he was like, "Yeah, I want to do this." So he's like, "Come to the studio. We'll get this done." So yeah, and that's
a great compliment and great contact. And also those club nights that you initiated sound quite cool, especially that it gained a certain following. You were onto something. Probably pick up when we get back to normal.
Yes,
hopefully.
Yeah, I think people, you know, this is my hot take on post-pandemic times, but I think that as much as this year sucks, when this is over, there's going to be a renaissance of culture and art and music.
Yeah.
I mean, people are going to be so ready, you know, because you've got, in my mind, you've got two kinds of people. You know, you've got the people that miss it, like us, who've known nothing but live music and partying and dance nights and all this fun stuff that makes life worth living, really, that we can't have, and we want it back. But then you've also got the younger kids that are like now 18, 19 years old, and they've never done
it. They've been missing out. Yeah, exactly.
So now they're going to get their first shot at it, and it's just going to be such a cool time. And actually, if you look historically back at the flu of 1918, you know, that's right before the 20s, and the 20s was like one of the most incredible times. Yeah, the roaring 20s. I mean, it really was an explosion of art and culture and music and just wild and raucous partying. And so I'm finally optimistic. Like, I actually just got vaccinated the other day, and I'm finally optimistic for the first time in like 9 months.
Yeah, it's unimaginable after a year like this, but we are going to go back to normal. There's no other way about it. But it's going to be fun. We're going to catch up on some things that we missed.
It is high time we played the first Vision Video track of this episode. Now, this was your first 7-inch single, released in March 2020.
Yeah, March of 2020, we put it out, and we pressed it on a 7-inch. So it's two tracks. It's In My Side and Inked in Red on the B-side. And it was our first public release of any kind of finished product. And it was very interesting because we had no idea what the reception was going to be.
Well, the reception obviously was great, seeing that In My Side has gathered 25,000 views on YouTube, even though there's not even an official video for the track. So here it is, the song that first put Vision Video on the map and in the spotlights. In My Side.
You know I wanna feel it again.
So this is In My Sight by Vision Video that we've just listened to. Well, you don't even have a video clip for it to this date, and yet you have 25,000 views on YouTube, even without an official video, just with the album cover there. You must have struck a chord somehow.
I decided really early on into the pandemic that I was just going to really, really work insanely hard at getting this music out there. And the only way to do that was online. So I've really just taken an extremely active role in social media, which is not always so fun. But, you know, the tools are out there for any band to be successful. But the problem is that you have to spend a lot of time doing it, because it's all about getting it out there and just sort of, you know, shouting into the void. And eventually, you know, people start listening. And if you're authentic and kind and funny every now and then or whatever, you know, whatever you're good at, you focus on that and you just promote it. And it just stuck. And I think, you know, it's a lot easier for me because, like, I'm not married. I don't have kids. My job at the fire department, you know, I work 24 hours on, 48 hours off. So I have a lot of time. To do this stuff, whereas a lot of people don't. So I guess I'm really lucky and fortunate in that way, to have had the ability to spend so much time on promotion.
You got a big following. You got like 20,000 people on Instagram, I saw, or 19K or something. It's a lot.
Yeah, you know, and a lot of it is just sharing it and just trying to, like, it's basically just saying, like, hey, I see you like this band. You probably like us. You know, but it's a lot. It's that thousands of times, you know, and you have to be authentic with people. You can't just like copy paste comments. You have to go out there and engage with people. And that's why it takes so much time on the internet. But, you know, I was talking to Dan, our bass player, the other day. And, you know, I mean, it's cool because, like, in one way you could look at it, it's like, well, anybody can do that. But I think inherently, like, the music has to be good, you know. I mean, it can't just be a bad song, but you just promote it and then people say, oh, well, this is cool and I'm going to follow these guys and listen to this. Like, it's almost like eating an apple. Like, it may look really good on the outside, but if you bite into it and it's rotten, you're done with that apple. You're not going to continue to eat the apple. So the core product, the music itself, has to be good, and that's the most important aspect of it. But it's just been really weird for me, like, because I inherently am not good at, like, self-promotion. And as a front person of a band, if you want to be successful, like, you just have to. So I've had to do a lot of sort of, like, suppressing my conscious thought of being like, wow, this is really stupid. Like, you're a 34-year-old man on TikTok. You know, like, it's a great tool.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, there's tons of people that have similar tastes in music, and, you know, you find them and you communicate with them. And it's all about that shared experience. Because if we were under normal times, we'd be out on the road right now. We'd be playing shows and I'd be meeting, you know, maybe new fans and making a connection with them, talking to them, getting out in the audience after a show and just getting to know people, going down to have a beer before we go to the next town. You know, those things matter because these are people that are paying their own money to go see you. But we don't have that right now. So you have to use the tools you have right now, which is the internet. And I think, you know, some of it's luck and some of it's just hard work. But
you only have a public body of work of 3 songs, and yet you've been able to build up a fan base of 20,000 plus people online. It's amazing considering the fact that you've only shown the tip of the iceberg to the audience so far. So all that work, working the social media, has definitely paid off. Another aspect of the way that the band is projecting itself outward is obviously the artwork. So I'm wearing one of your really cool t-shirts, which is highly recommended. And I think still for sale with a cat on a hearse, a Vision Video t-shirt. Really cool. Go check it out. And the artwork for this t-shirt, and also for your album, has been done by a guy called Ryan Dunn, who is also a guitarist for the band Hypertensions. Is that right? Is he a friend of the band?
So Ryan is a guy that we met through a mutual friend. We have a friend here named Jennifer Niswonger. And she She's an artist here locally, fantastic artist. And she actually did our first shirt with the girl with the sort of vision video burst. And she, we were looking for like some more artists just to get a different style. And she was like, hey, I have this friend of mine from art school. His name's Ryan. And she recommended him to us. And, cause he did the, all the cover art for all of the record and all of the singles. And he's actually doing all of the three more singles. Like I'm sure you've seen the Static Drone cover. And then the two more singles that are coming out, and then the full-length record he's doing. But yeah, Ryan's just a really cool guy. He plays in a psych rock band called Hypertensions, and he's I think he's in Indianapolis, and he's just a phenomenal artist and graphic designer, and just a really great guy to work with. You know, he has been on the money with almost every single thing we've asked him to do, just like first time, like here's more or less the product, and we're like, wow, that's it. You know, so it's always cool to work with somebody in an artist, I guess a graphic artist or whatever, that's like so immediately connected to you and your concept. So that was really cool to work with him.
To break the show up, it's not the right wording, but we select a few songs of ourselves alongside with what we experience when listening to Vision Video. And I have a March Violets one coming up, but Jeroen has also selected a great one. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about it, Jeroen.
Yeah, sure. So this is Dark by Secret Shame. The band has been active since 2016. It's three guys, two girls, with no less than three of the band members playing synthesizers. Lead singer Lena is one of them, and also the band's main songwriter. They're from Asheville, North Carolina, so they are Midwestern coastal neighbors of Vision Video. And we'll be playing Secret Shame right now because this is one of the acts that is most popular with Vision Video fans.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of Secret Shame before.
Yeah.
Of course you did, because you're the kid that has heard everything, right? You just told us. So what did you think of Secret Shame, and what did you think of the song?
I love Secret Shame. I found out about them about a year ago, and it was right around the time that we were really starting to play live shows, and I was just kind of looking for southeastern post-punk and goth rock bands to hopefully play shows with. So I kind of connected with them a little bit on Instagram to hopefully set up something as far as a live show. And they're just super cool, really nice to talk to, and their music is just phenomenal. There's so many different influences that I hear, which is great. The Skeletal Family, Susie and the Banshees, like all sorts of different, like even The Cure and Joy Division and some of the bigger names. But ultimately what I find great about Secret Shame is that they sound like themselves. They have their own sort of sound, and Lena's vocals are absolutely exquisite. I mean,
I was just about to emphasize that one. I really love that energetic singing.
Mm-hmm.
Totally agree, man.
Yeah, I mean, her lyrics are really, really well written too. Because I really believe in this concept of, like, I think it's Flannery O'Connor who said, "Show me, don't tell me." So it's like, show me what mm-hmm. you mean without having to spell it out for me. And I think that a lot of lyrics suffer from sort of just being cheesy, because it's like people are just like handing you it and stuffing it in your face. But I would rather infer what you mean and take my own meaning from it too. And she does such a good job at that. I mean, like, it's so authentic and relatable, but it's not like this exact message. And that's my favorite kind of music, lyrically and poetically, is music that is relatable that, in a way, but also you can gain your own value. You can gain your own message from it. And I think that Secret Shame does a really fantastic job at that. I think it was their last single, Dissolve, it's a absolutely incredible track. I mean, it is up there with in my playlist now as an almost daily listen, and I just cannot recommend them enough.
Yeah, I think it's a really good pick, Jeroen, to add this one to our special this week. I never heard of them, and even if you don't listen to the lyrics, you still get the energy of her singing, so you win both ways, I guess.
Yes,
great pick.
The big picture.
I got another question for you, if that's okay, Dusty. I saw you like movies as well on your Instagram. I saw some references to Pet Sematary.
Oh, yeah.
The Lost Boys, Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
You also use your 48 hours off of work to watch some movies, I guess, right?
Oh, yeah. That's like most of what I do in my free time. I mean, even,
I love that.
Even when I'm playing music, I'll usually have a movie on, just muted. Or something like that, just to have some sort of visual stimulus. It helps push my creativity a little bit, and oftentimes I gain ideas. Like there's a guitar riff that I sort of modeled after some of the score in the Pet Sematary original movie.
Oh, really?
it's just a couple notes, but I was like, oh, that's kind of a cool sound, so I kind of just messed with it a little bit, and you wouldn't know ever, like, hearing it. It's not like it's literally just a couple notes, but you know that, and I really love that, because that's like one of my favorite horror books, like Stephen King, and the movie is fantastic too. I grew up watching horror movies at a very young age, probably too young. And I guess it explains a lot about me, probably. But, looking back when I was 8 years old, my sister and my dad, my sister's 6 years older than me, and her and my dad were watching Pet Sematary on VHS in the living room. And I had, like, army crawled into the living room behind the couch and was like watching it from behind the couch. And I don't think they knew that I was there. And that's like not a movie for an 8-year old. And I remember being so like horrified by that movie and the story. But I mean, I loved it immediately. And that's, it just started this like lifelong obsession. And I mean, I guess you, those of you listening to the podcast can't see our video chat here, but my house is like horror movie themed. It's like completely ridiculous. Like it's all horror posters. Like you can see my Lucio Fulci zombie poster, and there's a Return to Living Dead.
Okay, I see one in the back.
Yeah, and it's okay, just, you know, I love the controlled chaos of a horror film. You know, it's like you get to expose yourself to this exciting danger, but there's no threat really, and that's
no consequences in real life. Yeah, got it. And I think so that also Jeroen and I, we like movies, especially with a certain edge, that move the movies and the music we like, they're interlinked in a certain way. And the word interlinked is like that Blade Runner 2049 reference, obviously. So it's like a sci-fi, but anything with a bit of a dark edge, if it's imagery or if it's music, it kind of appeals.
Yeah, I think music and cinema is so intertwined and interlinked. That's good. I actually just watched Blade Runner 2049 the other night for like the 50th time, I think.
Nice, man.
It's awesome, right? Yeah.
It's so good.
And it's one of these things which is weird and very interesting at the same time, that people that listen to a certain type of music also usually share the same type of taste. I mean, we've talked about the Blade Runner movies. I'm looking at your Facebook profile and I see a picture from Blade Runner right up there, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
We've been talking about Lost Boys being probably the best vampire movie ever. And
oh,
yeah,
definitely.
I go on your social feed and I see a complete discussion on exactly that movie.
Yeah.
And it's weird how people can come from across the world and sort of have that sensitivity, that feel that really appeals to them. And there is Pet Sematary, obviously. So Gov is now holding up his Pet Sematary video disc. It's funny how people all across the world can sort of share a love for both cinema and music with a certain sort of atmosphere.
Yeah. And I think it's all about the kind of person you are, in a way, you know. It's not that people that don't like post-punk and goth rock and horror films are any lesser. It's just you're into something else. But I think that the people that are into this kind of stuff that we are into are people that are, you know, not afraid of the, like, darker and macabre and tragic things in life. You know, I think it's people who can understand that not everything has to be this, like, you know, beautiful, happy day in order to gain value. And in fact we find our own beauty in these things. And it's almost like a cliche, but it's very true, because especially nowadays when there's so much tragedy, I mean, there's so, like, you know, here in America we just hit, I think, 400,000 deaths this year from COVID-19.
Yeah, man.
And it's
that's one in every 1,000, I believe I saw that.
Dan, our bass player, said it really, really well. He said, "We're living in the most boring sci-fi post-apocalypse movie of all time."
Yeah.
And he nailed it, because it's like, there's not like zombies busting through your window trying to kill you, or like the virus isn't making you like hemorrhage from your eyes and like scream and run around.
Yeah.
But like, it is still like insane and tragic, and you know, the dystopia is not even the virus itself. The dystopia is the government. It's the government that says, "Fuck it, we don't care," you know. And that's like my ultimate disappointment. I'm not shocked, but you know, in America right now, we have like 26% of all of the cases worldwide, and it's just one country. It's literally because like our president and this completely inept government said it's not real.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was on the front lines of it from the beginning, and I, you know, because I'm a paramedic and a firefighter, so every third shift I am on the ambulance, and I see it every day. I mean, it's like, it's horrible, you know. So I think this sort of thing, especially right now, is really resonating with people, because we're living in like this weird, fucked up version of reality. But the people that like this sort of thing are connected in it in the way that we accept it. You know, we're not afraid of, like, you might be afraid of it, but you don't let it, that fear rule you, and you're willing to look at the fear instead of recoil from it.
Was this also the reason for you to record a protest song like Agent Orange again? Was that part of the reason you chose that song?
So I found the original Ski Patrol a couple of years ago when I was like starting to write everything for Vision Video. And, you know, Trump had been elected and I was vehemently against him from the beginning. You know, I mean, initially I thought, well, okay, maybe he'll fix a couple things, but he was so absolutely corrupt and inept in like every single way that, I mean, I was just immediately like, wow, this guy is a total joke. And we like brought this on ourselves. So I was listening to the song Agent Orange, you know, from Ski Patrol. And I was like, you know, this is about Vietnam. And, the original guys wrote it about, they had actually, met, Nick, the guitarist, when we put out the single, he's a really cool guy, and he was telling me about how they had watched Apocalypse Now, and they had written the song after watching the movie because they were just so struck by it. And so I guess for me initially it was maybe about war still, and it resonated with me because of my experience in wartime, but it really quickly became a very clearly anti-Trump song. To me, it was very, I mean, like, with the obvious connotation that the man is literally orange. And when we started playing live with it, you know, I would tell people, I'm like, well, this one goes out to our president, you know, or whatever. and it just became a protest song for me personally, because it really, I think, in a lot of ways, what's going on with COVID and, you know, civil rights in America and worldwide, but especially in America, you know, it's, there is an extreme frustration that I have not felt since I was in the war. And it's a futility. It's almost like these people are just fucking this up so badly. And I'm just on the receiving end of this, you know, and we just have to deal with it. And so, the parallel between, you know, the war theme of the original song and our current day conundrum was just so clear to me. And it was, you know, and that's kind of how we spun it. And live, performing that song live is like one of my favorite things, because it really, it is a total, like, I just really get into that mindset of just total, not, I wouldn't call it hatred, because I try not to espouse that emotion, but just so much disdain for the incompetency of these people. Infect me. This track is called Agent Orange. It's a Ski Patrol cover from the 1980 post-punk band in England, and I really hope you enjoy it. So here we go. We'll be right back.
Do you look to the future with hope now that the Trump period is coming to an end and he doesn't seem to be able to rally up enough supporters to be able to continue his stint?
Yeah, I think, well, you know, in at face value, yes, I'm very much so more optimistic than I was, say, like 6 months ago when we had no clue. I mean, and it was palpably terrifying 6 months ago to be here. I mean, it was between the protests for Black Lives Matter and the COVID, you know, really picking up steam and just all these sorts of things. It was really scary. So for the first time, yeah, I do feel some level of optimism. But I think that while optimism is important to have just generally, it's also important to recognize that, like, Trump is a symptom and not the cause. These people that voted him in and that believe in the things that they do, they haven't gone anywhere. They just lost. So there's we're pushing the pendulum back to normalcy and away from this insanity. But you got to remember that those people are still out there and they're still, you know, causing societal influence through their everyday action. And I think it's just important to, like, Americans and people in all over the world have to just remain, like, more politically involved now, because that's what happened with Trump. Is like we just fell asleep at the wheel and he came in and took control. And it's like we're paying for our lack of involvement in the political process that, you know, actually does work. And I think that's one thing that I am actually optimistic about with America is, like, this has proven that the system works, you know, because they tried so hard to subvert it and it still is functioning.
Yeah, thank God for that.
Yeah,
it's difficult to pick two. It's one out of two you can pick.
Right.
And one may be a little bit better than the other, but still may not be a favorite pick. And let's hope that it takes maybe four to 8 years and then a new sense comes. I don't know what the English word is. But
yeah, it's I'm pretty dispassionate about Joe Biden. Like, I think he's going to be like a very average president because he's not very, like, he's very conservative, really. If you look at his policies and things that he's voted on, he's actually pretty conservative. So I don't think we're going to see a lot of change, but it's at least like a return to sanity that has been gone, like just straight up gone.
Boring sounds quite good after this year.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the bar has been lowered all the way to the floor, so it won't be hard for him to get over it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you can barely leap over it and you're like already the best president in the world.
Yeah, at least dependable. Yeah, exactly.
That's one thing you can say about Trump. He's a really great act to follow.
God, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like being the middle act in a show and the first band just was fucking terrible. You're like, oh, we don't have to. We could phone it in.
Yeah, yeah. So let us talk a bit more about the way that you guys work at Vision Video. I hear you talk about ideas for songs a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So how does your songwriting process look?
So more or less, up till now, it's been basically I will write some really simple bass lines and a beat. You know, I'll kind of pick like do I want this slower? Do I want this faster? And I'll put down some very essential bass lines. And then I'll just get to work at creating guitar riffs, and that's the hardest part for me, is just coming up with something that just is a little new and different, but, you know, still is accessible, because I like music that I write to be accessible. I'm trying to tell you a story or give you a message, and I want to pull you into that, and I think that the best way of doing that is to create something as sonically pleasing first.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't tell you the story if you hear it and go, oh, that doesn't really sound good. So I spend a lot of time writing the guitar parts, and then basically, you know, I bring these small ideas to the band and say, okay, well, what do you guys think about this? And we just sort of play, like pre-pandemic, we would just play all together and build it up. But these newer songs that we've added to the record, I kind of built a lot of it myself, and then the individual pieces, be it Emily on keys, you know, Dan on bass, or Jason on drums, They've all sort of manipulated the basic foundation of what I've built and made it their own and brought their character into it. And then like a lot of it, honestly, was really formed in the studio with Tom, where we kind of, you know, took some calculated risks and said, okay, well, we're all going to get together at the studio and, you know, we're just going to have to take precautions as best as we can. And so we, you know, we sort of wrote these songs really quickly, but there was a foundation already built. So moving forward, though, I think, you know, once everything gets back to normal, we'll be back to that concept of just having a very basic idea and just really just sitting there and playing it for quite a long time until it sort of organically forms into something that we all like. And we're all very good at, I think the band does really well because we're very good at communicating with each other. We're all really good friends. And so if something doesn't sound great, there's no really hard feelings of saying, hey, try this maybe, or maybe let's cut this out or what, you know. And that's a really, really valuable thing because there's a lot of artists and musicians that are not like that, or you tell them, hey, this isn't great, and they're like, well, I'm offended, and you know, so
no, that kills bands, man. There's definitely bands that got ended that way, so
we've discussed plenty of those, Jeroen, over the last seasons.
Yes,
bands that split up because of arguments and everything. And I also like the marketing way of approaching these songs, that you gotta lure people in, make it attractive, and then tell the story. It's like I like it. Interesting approach.
So how is the goth scene in the American Midwest? Are there any other contemporary or new bands that you like and that maybe our listeners should check out as well?
So it's really different depending on what city you're in, I'd say. I mean, it really, it's in most major cities in the United States. Here we've built our own small scene that's actually grown quite a bit. I mean, Athens, Georgia is a city of 130,000 people, so it's not a huge city. Mm-hmm. But for that size, we've actually got quite a good little scene here. And it's a lot of fun because everybody knows each other and there's not really drama. It's just very, like, it's just people who love the music and like to dance. And, you know, and my friend Steven and I and Dan, the bass player as well, we DJ together and we just have these great nights here. But like in Atlanta, there are varying qualities and different vibes of nights that they do there. Like some of them are like way more serious. Some of them are more along the lines of what we do, where it's just like just to have fun and to not take yourself too seriously. You know, there's places like you can go in LA where they have like strict dress codes. The one that we do, we've never had that because I don't believe in it. I think it repels people away from something that they might actually like if they go up and say, oh, this is really cool.
Yeah.
I didn't even know this existed. But if you're not letting somebody in because they're wearing like what I'm wearing now, like jeans and a t-shirt, that's elitism. And I think that stifles any scene, you know, be it punk or goth or whatever subculture. It's going to stifle a scene because you're not letting people look in. And you know, I get like why they do that, because they want to keep it safe and they want to keep the vibe right or whatever, but like, you know, that's what security's for at a venue. You know, you say, hey, this guy's being a dick, kick him out.
Yeah,
it's that easy to me. But
yeah,
you know,
a t-shirt is a really bad indicator of whether a person is going to be a dick or not, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've met people that were like in immaculate full traditional goth rock makeup and death rock or death hawk, you know, hair that's all teased, and they're like total dickheads, and I'm like, man, I don't want to talk to you at all. Like, you know, it's just that typical saying of you can't judge a book by its cover. I mean, you never know what somebody's going to be like.
So the last time I was in Georgia, I was in Atlanta, 2012, I think, a while ago.
Yeah,
I noticed that the club life was very segregated in both in terms of color of people visiting certain clubs as well as the types of music. You'd go into a club and you'd hear exactly one type of music all the time, with like almost no variety in there. Is that still the case? And how does that work? Do you have your own sort of goth hangout where it's all goth all the time? Or do you organize club nights with more variety? Or how does that work?
Yeah, we so here locally in Athens, it's very diverse. There's all different kinds of people, from different races, religions, you know, countries. I mean, people, it's a very uniquely diverse group here. And we don't usually stick to one place. We've gone to different venues, and there's not really like a goth place that's like full time. We have a couple bars and music venues that are like more alternative, I'll say, but there's not like the goth place. And as far as like our DJ nights, yeah, we play like Joy Division, The Cure, Bauhaus, Sisters of Mercy, all of the staples. And we play a lot of the new stuff, you know, the new, it's like Secret Shame and Panic Priest and Twin Tribes.
Drab Majesty.
We play that. But we also like I kind of mentioned earlier, we don't really take ourselves seriously at all. Like, so we'll play like, I play like B-52's Rock Lobster.
Ah, oh, that's nice.
Because we're from Athens and it's a great song and it's so much fun to dance to.
Yeah.
And it still works. And, you know, we play like a lot of 80s new wave. But like just party music, and then every now and then like we'll throw in something just weird, and nobody cares because it's supposed to be fun. And if you can't make fun of yourself and like do that, then you're just like a little ridiculous, you know? Like the way that I've always seen it is like I'm an adult dressing up like a horror movie monster listening to like 80s bands. Like, I cannot take myself that seriously.
So it's so boring. Being an adult is quite overrated.
Yes.
I like that lightheartedness and some fun. And if I may, Dusty and Jeroen, can I take it to a fun record?
Sure.
We talked about Tom Ashton and him being in your life, in the band's life, and recording and mixing. I took a song by the March Violets. They're an English post-punk goth rock band from 1981. They formed in Leeds. And I'm saying they are because they are still active. After imploding in the 80s, they reformed in 2010. And I also knew Andrew Eldridge, by the way, from the shirt that you're wearing. From the same university that they met in Leeds. And the song I'm about to play or start in for our listeners, it's not really a goth one, but a fun one.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about the song Turn to the Sky, and it's from 1986. It's also in a movie from 1987, and that movie was won by Howard Hughes, actually. He wrote that movie. He didn't direct it. It's Some Kind of Wonderful. But let me stop talking and let's enjoy some fun from the goth genre that we love so much. Turn to the Sky.
Run! infect me.
The fun thing is, if you look at the song on YouTube, it's not on Spotify. This album is not probably a rights issue with their back catalog.
Yeah.
If you look at the YouTube comments, you see that this movie, Some Kind of Wonderful, is still pulling people in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great way for the March Violets to be discovered by new viewers all the time. So I was wondering, probably, Dusty, you've already thought about this, being a cinema lover.
Oh, yeah.
Are you planning on getting your music into a movie sometime soon?
That's, like, definitely ideal. And, I mean, that would be just such a dream of mine to come true, to have it in, like, a really fun horror movie or something like that. You know, our manager lives up in Chicago. His name is also Dan. So we have two Dans. We've got bassist Dan and manager Dan, as I refer to them. But manager Dan lives up in Chicago, and he's a really good friend of ours. And he's really working that angle to get the movie in publishing rights. The music in publishing rights. Because, like, as an artist and a musician now, that's, like, one of the best ways to make money. Because you don't really make money off of streaming. You know, you don't really sell a lot of records anymore unless you're, like, huge, huge band. So you really make money off of, you know, touring, merch sales, and publishing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think for me it would just be such a cool thing to have it in any film. Especially, like, talking to Tom about Some Kind of Wonderful. Because it was funny, he was telling me just the other day in the studio about the experience. They're actually in the movie. There's a club scene, and they're the band playing in the nightclub.
They're doing a live performance in the movie, yeah.
Right. So, but it's funny because he said that they had no sound because it's a sound set, and they're recording the actors in the dialogue.
No way.
They're, like, playing, but there's, like, no strings on the guitars or something, and, like, they had to wear these special things on their shoes that, like, muted the sound of them moving.
Uh-huh.
And he said it was just the weirdest experience. I was like, oh, that's really cool to, like, see something like that.
So they had to play back without hearing the track themselves.
Yeah, so they're just sort of pantomiming.
Do you know this movie, Drive?
Oh, yeah, that's a great one, yeah.
That's also, like, there's some really Kavinsky, Jeroen's suggestion that we played a couple of episodes back. Also, some French acts that made it into a really big Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
And I can definitely see your music making into it, but let's hope those connections work out.
So if you could pick a director, if you could pick one director that you could have include one of your songs in their movies, which director would you would you most love to have integrate Vision Video into a movie?
Man, I guess I don't know about. I feel like most of the directors that I'm really acquainted with are, like, older, many of them dead. But
it's going to be hard then. Yeah. So they have to be alive.
Okay. Huh, alive directors today.
David Lynch?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, yeah, probably something like that. That or, like, John Carpenter, he's still alive.
Ooh, nice pick.
You know, he's...
didn't even think of them, yeah.
He's one of my favorites, you know. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of... what's the guy's name? Ty West? He did, like... He did House of the Devil, and he did... Oh, I'm going to have to look up the list. I think it's spelled T-I and West, and he's done some really great modern horror. Ty West did The House of the Devil. He did VHS.
Heard of that, yeah.
He did The Innkeepers, ABCs of Death. Yeah, if you've never seen his films, I highly recommend them, especially...
I'm going to look them up right now.
Yeah, The Innkeepers and You're Next, those are great horror movies.
I heard about that.
Yeah.
I believe it's on Netflix over here.
Yeah, check it out. Ty West is... I would love to have Vision Video in one of those. But, you know, I mean, yeah, there's so many things, so many different directors... But I feel, I guess I'm just less savvy about directors nowadays than I am about older directors.
Oh, but those are some great suggestions.
Yes, sir.
Cool.
So thanks for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Infected.
You were mentioning death rock. This is also something that your friends of Secret Shame are using to describe their music.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a thing these days in Georgia or in the Midwest, the death rock scene?
Yeah, I'd say it's sort of included in the general umbrella of sort of post-punk or goth rock, or the goth scene, as it were. One of my really good friends, Adria, she plays in a band called Tears for the Dying here in Athens also.
Yep.
And they are like true, straightforward death rock, and it's awesome. I mean, it's like it's like a female-fronted Christian death, essentially. And honestly, this is like super controversial. And Adria, if you hear this, hi, first of all. But I actually like Tears for the Dying more than Christian death. Like, a lot more. Really good.
Wow, that's high praise.
I mean, I think that her music is just a little bit more, like, it's a little more accessible. It's a little more, like, melodic. It's less abrasive, which I appreciate those things about Christian death. And I think that they were so groundbreaking. But, Adria and Debbie, they're, like, incredible...
Mm-hmm.
musicians, and I highly recommend checking them out. But yeah, it's definitely a thing that's still around in the States.
Cool. So here it is, Tears for the Dying with Dead Weight.
Cool.
Tears for the Dying.
Tom Ashton also produced and recorded that record.
Is there anything that you would like to get off your chest on Vision Video or your future? Or
I guess, you know, I'm just excited to get out there because, you know, we've gained this cool following of really awesome people that I've really genuinely enjoyed meeting, you know, you guys included. And it's so funny because it's like you know, when we started this year, you know, we had a couple hundred followers online and it was just like we had no concept. I had no idea how much of a thing this was going to become. And, you know, everybody in the band feels the same way, that we're just so like grateful, first of all, for everybody streaming our stuff and sharing it and all that. I mean, it really does mean a lot to us because we work so hard on it, just like any other artist does. And to pick us to share and listen to, and that means a lot because it really makes it worthwhile, all the hard work. But yeah, we're just really excited to meet everybody in person and to play in person, because you know, what we're going to do is what we were doing. We're going to go play shows, and then usually Dan and I DJ a dance party afterwards, you know, because we want it to be fun. We want to enjoy this weird, kooky music that we listen to together, and the best way to do that is communally and in live.
So 2021 is going to be a year of hope, a year of returning to the congregation, to our communal sessions of therapy, which we also call concerts.
Yes.
We're looking forward to enjoying all of that in the next year, and really looking forward also to the release of your album, which is going to be called Inked in Red.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually something, another thing to look forward to. Let's see, maybe we also can get an international tour in the books. If you continue to grow and skyrocket the way that you have in 2020, you might be a stadium act before long, man. Looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Dear Creatures of the Night, I think this brings us to the end of our podcast. We'd like to thank Dusty for joining us in his really busy working schedule and all the heavy things that he's encountering each day. So thanks for making this special with us. And also, dear listeners, do let us know how you like this episode or which favorite song you would like to hear on the show next time. Just use the contact form on our website, that is theinfected.nl, to get in touch. While you're on there, also check out our merchandise section and use the discount code INFECTME for free shipping. Yes, that is free shipping. The site also features unique interviews with more and more interesting artists, and you can find it all the transcripts of previous podcasts and loads of music there. So check it out. And that's all for now. So thank you guys for doing the show, and also thanks for listening. We will probably retreat back into our crypt and call it a night. We will be back for a third season of this podcast in January.
Cool.
So goodbye, children of the night. We will meet again soon.
All right. See you later. Stay strange. Stay strange.